This episode of Talk Central is brought to you by Pinnacle, Africa's top ICT distribution business, delivering the exceptional every time.
I'm Richard van den Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 242 for the week starting 25 November 2018.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central. You can WhatsApp the show on the number 071-999-1111.
On Talk Central this week, Stella steals the show.
Also on the show this week, the US wants other countries to stop buying from Huawei, Standard Bank launches an MVNO, Black Friday and Cyber Monday, and a company is using diamonds to power drones.
Interesting stuff. It's Sunday. We're live streaming again at live.techcentral.co.za, and it's time to talk everything tech.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
We are indeed live streaming for the first time in a while. We've had some real technical challenges, which eventually put down to the Bitdefender antivirus software, which was causing problems with our live stream. We are back. We are recording on our normal Sunday schedule at 1 o'clock again, so it's good to be here. Please join the conversation and WhatsApp us on 071-999-1111. If you send us a voice note, we'll include it in a future show and possibly even today's show, if you can get it through to us in time. But let's do our quiz.
The first question: with the launch this week of Standard Bank Mobile, how many MVNOs or mobile virtual network operators now piggyback on Cell C's network?
And the second question: how many set-top boxes have been activated by OpenView, the free-to-air satellite provider owned by eMedia Investments?
Third question: which technology company is on the verge of overtaking Apple as the world's most valuable company?
And that's a remarkable comeback story. And the fourth question: Uber rival Taxify said this week it is expanding to which part of South Africa?
It's a very good expansion, too. And the last question: the soon-to-be-launched Discovery Bank is being led by a former chief information officer of Nedbank. Who is he?
And that's our quiz, as always, the results at the end of the show. But let's dive into this week's news. And it was a busy one, even though we recorded the last show. I think it was on Tuesday afternoon, Richard. So in those three and a half short days, plenty has happened, including an announcement by the president that the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services and the Department of Communications, which, as you know, was split very controversially by the former president, Jacob Zuma, in 2014, after the general election in 2014, is going to be reintegrated. It should never have happened in the first place. It's caused all sorts of problems, not least because ICASA was now reporting to the Ministry of Communications, whereas much of the work that ICASA does is related to the work that the Ministry and Departments or Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services did. It made no sense at the time. It's still not entirely clear why Zuma did it in the first place, although there's speculation that he wanted to install Faith Mutambi there to be the protector for Claudio Motsoeneng at the SABC. Eunice Karim, of course, was running telecoms prior to that split, and he was fired. Well, that was a strange noise.
Yeah, sorry, phone vibrating on the desk.
Oh, okay. Couldn't quite place it there. But so being reintegrated, the ministry is being reintegrated first. Ramaphosa saying that the departments themselves will only be reintegrated after the 2019 election. I'm not sure what the reason for that is. Both departments are working on some very important work at the moment, so perhaps he doesn't want to disrupt that work ahead of the election. We're looking both at the digital migration project, of course, as well as the allocation of radio frequency spectrum. The DTT project is being run by Communications, and the spectrum project is being run by DTPS. So perhaps he's aware that he doesn't want to disrupt that through this reintegration process. But it's a welcome move. It's fixing a mistake that Zuma made. It's going to take a while. It's going to be fairly complex. But what's really interesting is that he's moved both ministers that were in these two portfolios out. So Nombulo Mokonyane, the minister who famously said, don't worry about the rand, we'll pick it up after it falls, has been moved out into the Department of Environmental Affairs. She's, of course, best known for destroying the Department of what was it called? Department of Water and Sanitation, I think it's called. She left it basically bankrupt. She seemed to be doing too bad a job at the DOC. She was making the right moves around the digital migration project. But she's been shifted out to environmental affairs. Many people suggest she should not be in the cabinet at all, that she made such a mess of the Department of Water Affairs that she doesn't deserve to be in cabinet.
Yeah.
And Minister Kwele, who's been the telecoms minister since 2014, has been shifted out. I'm sure he's not very happy about that, but he's been moved to the Department of Home Affairs, where he replaces Malusi Gigaba, who resigned, I think it was last week or the week before. I think it was last week. So Kwele is the new Minister of Home Affairs. He hasn't exactly covered himself in glory. He did very little in this portfolio for the first 3 years that he was in there. And only, I think, after Ramaphosa became president did he start to act on some of these things. He dawdled and basically slept through his portfolio for 3 years while his department came up with policies under the Electronic Communications Amendment Bill that threatened to do very real damage to the telecommunications sector. That legislation is still going through the processes, although I think it's in the process of being diluted to a large extent. But he's gone now, so I don't think he's going to be terribly missed by the sector. And he's been replaced by Stella Ndebeni Abrams, who was both the deputy minister under Faith Mutambi and famously fell out with Faith Mutambi, which I think is a positive point in her book. Mm-hmm. And she's also served for the longest time as the deputy minister of telecommunications and postal services, most recently, of course, under Kwele. And she's young. She's quite dynamic. She's a bit of an unknown quantity, though. I haven't personally engaged with her a lot. I've spoken to her a few times, but there's nothing about her that raises any alarm bells, which I think is a good thing. She has been pushing the agenda of skills development and getting the country ready for the so-called fourth industrial revolution, which is a term that politicians seem to have latched onto. But she has been making the right noises, and I get the impression she's a very political animal, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, she is a politician. She seems to be fairly well respected from people I've spoken to, but she's also is a bit of an unknown quantity. She's quite young, which is I think is a good thing in this sector. You don't want old people trying to figure out new technology. I don't mean to be ageist, but it's just a fact. She's social media savvy. She's on quite mm-hmm. active on Facebook and Twitter. So while it's not an appointment that I'm getting wildly excited about, it's also not an appointment that I'm particularly despondent about. So I think it's going to be a case of wait and see what she does. But she might surprise us in the positive direction. I hope she does.
No, definitely. I just really wish for. I would really like to see a government where people who are leaders in their industry get appointed to these ministerial roles. So if you get appointed to the tech, to the communications industry, to the ICT. To any of the departments relating with tech, then you need to really be good at tech, right? I mean, you need to understand it, or at least, come from a background where you have done many years within that.
Well, she's certainly got the experience in the sector. I mean, she's been in this portfolio, or either communications or telecoms, for I think about 10 years, if I'm not mistaken. So, I think she... I mean, she certainly knows people in the sector. She understands what the dynamics are. She's attended all the colloquia and all the meetings that have happened over the years. She knows what needs to be done. I think it's also helpful that the president also understands these issues, having been the chairman of MTN for many years.
Yeah, exactly.
But
we need it in some of the other. We need it in some of the other departments too. Mm. I mean, where we see those departments lacking, it is often where there's probably not expertise. To understand the problems.
Yeah.
Because every department has problems. I mean, you don't get into one of these departments with, it's a working department. Mm. You can almost say you always have to solve the issues first.
Mm. Yeah. So let's hope the reintegration isn't going to take away the focus, because there are so many projects, not just the Spectrum thing and the DTT thing. And the DTT thing is not going to be concluded by the next election. So we can just hope that that reintegration isn't going to take their eye off the ball for too long, because there is a lot of work it needs doing, and a lot of problems that need fixing from the Zuma administration days. But I'd say on balance, I'm more I'm somewhat positive about this appointment, and I think let's give her a chance and see how she does.
Yeah, we certainly need more young blood in government, let's be honest. So it's good to see that.
Yeah. Right, speaking of politicians, let's jump across to the good old US of A and its president, Donald Trump. So
the best thing the internet has at the moment.
So the US government is basically declaring war on China's Huawei. We already know that they've put pressure on telecommunications operators in the U.S. not to work with Huawei in the rollout of 5G infrastructure. We also know it's almost impossible to buy a Huawei device through an operator in the U.S. For example, the fantastic Huawei Mate 20 Pro, which both of us are now using, Rehat. It's impossible to buy that in the U.S. unless you buy it on the internet and have it imported, which is just crazy.
Yeah, because all devices are made in China, right?
Yeah, including the iPhone.
Exactly.
You know, there almost seems to be a paranoia that the Chinese are going to spy on American citizens through these devices, through these networks. I don't know. Maybe that just says something about what America's doing with the equipment that it sells. I don't know.
Look, if you look at this in context to what else Donald Trump has been doing, you know, he's certainly closing up the U.S., or he's trying
to... He's a nationalist, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he's trying to bring things in back home. And the first step in doing anything, really, within any politics, right, is to alienate the things that you want to get rid of and make them bad and make people think they're dangerous. Mm. And, I mean, you can cripple entire industries by doing this type of thing.
The U.S. The U.S. has always thrived when it's had an enemy, right? I mean, yes. Throughout the 19... I mean, basically from the Second World War up to the end of the 1980s, that enemy was Russia. The Cold War, you know, it actually got Americans on the moon as quickly as it did because they were worried the Russians were going to get there first.
Or did it? We never know. I'm just teasing. No, you're right. I mean, conflict is creating a lot of business and making politics good business.
Yeah. And that military-industrial complex that the U.S. thrives on—it almost seems that they need that to thrive as a nation. And that new enemy, if you like, is China, made quite clear by Donald Trump. And
yeah,
the tariff, trade wars, warnings about using Huawei equipment. I think it's jingoism, isn't it?
Mm. No, exactly, and I guess. China is a threat, in terms of economically. I mean, they are a powerhouse.
They absolutely are.
And America is now feeling threatened because they are not anymore, right?
Well, they are. So they are the powerhouse, but there's someone challenging them for that superpower.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For a long time, America has been the world's only superpower, and now China is stepping up, and we're going to have two superpowers in this world again.
I mean, they own the tech industry, right? So, you know, I guess if they just stop producing stuff, the entire world will, we'll face some shortages and we'll have some issues to deal with.
China is the world's factory. China is the world's factory.
They hold some cards, which is very powerful.
Yeah. So the US this week, asking its allies around the world not to buy equipment to build telecommunications networks from Huawei. We've already seen Australia saying that they're banning the operators there from building 5G infrastructure using Huawei gear. There's been no indication that I've seen of anyone else doing this. Huawei is huge in Europe. Of course, it's massive in Africa and in South Africa. Our networks are powered by Huawei equipment to a large extent. And the same is true in Europe. The same is true in Asia. I just look at this and I think, this is just nuts. From a consumer perspective, for example, Americans are not getting access to these fantastic devices. I mean, I would argue that the Huawei Mate 20 Pro is the handset of the year. It's far better than the new Apple iPhone XS and XS Max, in my view. I mean, it depends if you want to go iOS or Android. If you're iOS, then clearly, Apple is your choice, but if you're just comparing hardware and feature sets, I think the Huawei beats the new iPhone hands down with its massive battery, its fantastic cameras, and its in-screen fingerprint reader.
Yeah, look, they certainly, like a few years back when they started their massive enterprise hardware drive and they started introducing, all these really high-end technologies for the telecommunications industry. I mean, they've really shined there in that industry. And now when they bring that to the consumer side, and we're seeing what happens when a seemingly, and I say seemingly unknown, but they've been known for a long time, but they just come out of seemingly nowhere with some fantastic devices over the last year or so.
Yeah.
And it's refreshing to see, and I'm really excited about it. Like, you know, everybody that I speak to about it, like, I never thought I would actually be using a Huawei phone and actually enjoy it.
Yeah.
Just because the brand was never something I looked at fondly. But it just shows, you know, any brand has the ability to introduce something really interesting and take on a market and become a new player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's interesting times we're living in.
And I mean, the suggestion that Huawei is maybe planting spyware or whatever it is in their network equipment to spy on countries. I mean, the moment someone finds out that spyware I've just realized we're not live streaming. I think I've set it up under the wrong account. Apologies, sure. Guys. Well, I'm apologizing to no one because no one's listening, but I've realized we're streaming it under Talk Central when I should have streamed it under Tech Central. So apologies about that, but the show will be available as a podcast.
The show will go on, Duncan.
The show will go on. Yes, well, I won't make the mistake next week. But what was I saying? Huawei, you know, if they put spyware chips or something like that in their network gear and that gets found out, their business is in serious trouble because people would just stop buying their equipment. They can't do it.
Exactly. And also, you have to – I don't know how you would hide anything like that because you always have – I mean, there's a lot of – so any new product that comes out, you can be guaranteed that – any of their high-end competitors are going to be buying that device and deconstructing it, de-engineering it just to see what they did, how they did it. I mean, any good business would, I would imagine, because you just want to see what the competitors are doing. And then on the other side, you also have people who's building new software, hacking software. At some point, somebody will see something. Mm. If there's code or if there's hardware.
Someone will find it.
Someone will find it. I mean, we're living in a very open society these days. Information travels very quickly. I mean, if Apple can't even keep secret that they're launching or, you know, their new device a secret before launch, and I mean, there's big money in that, right? I mean, we don't know what we don't know, but it's somebody, I'm sure somebody would have found it. I mean, we've got a lot of geeks out there looking and playing with a lot of toys, I'm sure.
Have you noticed, by the way, when using your Huawei phone, that when you access some of the Huawei services, it pops up a little warning message on the screen saying, to use this service, we need to connect to servers in mainland China?
No, I actually haven't been playing with the I mean, I've created the account, but I haven't been playing with those features much.
I think to use the, you know, the search tool, if you scroll down from the top of the screen, if you enable that, then it pops up a message saying, we need to connect to servers in mainland China. So I think they're very aware of the fact that, you know, there's a negative perception about China in the rest of the world. I mean, the internet is heavily, controlled, censored. And, you know, I'd be a bit paranoid about putting my personal data on a mainland Chinese server where it might be accessed and analyzed by the Chinese government. So it was interesting to see that notification anyway. So they're quite aware of the sensitivities around this, let's put it that way.
Yeah. But look, let's be honest and let's be fair here too. At this point in time, I would also be very wary of any brand rather than a country. I would be more wary of a brand trying to be malicious. Mm. So yes, I mean, when looking at Huawei in that perspective, but again, like you said, you're gonna destroy everything once it comes out. It's game over.
Yeah, you're right. I think we should probably be more concerned about what Facebook is doing with our data than what Huawei is doing with it.
Exactly, exactly. And our sugar intake as a population, that's probably another thing we should be more worried about.
Sugar.
Sugar intake. No, but there's a lot of things out there. And yes, I mean, business, I mean, when we look back in history too, I mean, war is a good example of that. But how many times have business and industry changed the course of just, you know, I guess, general timeline of history. Changing the course of where people are going, really. You know, if you introduce a war into society, things change for everybody. If Facebook leaks a lot of data and election gets thrown because people think that a person is bad and they're not, or, you know, random stuff like that. That's what we're dealing with these days.
Yeah.
Interesting times.
Indeed, interesting times indeed, perhaps in the Chinese curse sense of the word. But I think, Rehad, let's take a quick ad break there. We'll be back right after this.
BitCo is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. BitCo.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Because you found me.
I feel we have a strong connection.
Well, you're pretty fly for a Wi-Fi. Should we drop it like a hotspot and head back to yours so we can show Max and snuggle? Let's get giga with it.
But I don't have fiber. Don't get caught in 50 shades of delay. Broadband your horizons and switch to Vox's super fast, super reliable fiber network. Experience the momentum. Connect your world. Visit us at vox.co.za/fiber.
Well, welcome back to the show. How's it, Rehat?
How's it, Duncan?
You bank with Standard Bank, don't you?
No, I don't.
Oh, you're with Nedbank?
Nedbank, yeah.
Nedbank,
yeah.
Okay. Who are those people? I always think of that phrase when I heard Nedbank, that pale flying. Who are those people? I'm not sure it's the best payoff line for a bank. But Standard Bank, who I also don't bank with, launched an MVNO this week, worst kept secret in the industry. We broke the story back in February already, and they finally launched it. It's being headed up by Steve Bailey, who used to run Virgin Mobile in South Africa, and he's probably the top expert in MVNOs in South Africa, having launched MVNX and launched half a dozen or more MVNOs on the back of Cell C's network. Standard Bank now launching their MVNO. It looks quite interesting, a different sort of model. They don't have bundles. They don't have data bundles or voice bundles. So you just basically say, I want to spend this amount of money a month, and they then there's a sliding tier, and you pay based on the tier you're on. So I think the maximum is 269 rand a month, and then you pay, I think it's 5 cents a megabyte for data.
5 cents a megabyte.
So the less you buy, the more expensive the your data and your voice calls are. It's an interesting model. I'm not a Standard Bank customer, so I have no intention of using this. And to be honest, if I was a Standard Bank customer, I probably wouldn't use it either. Pretty much in the same way as I am an FNB customer, and I don't use FNB Connect and have no interest in using FNB Connect. But there must be an interesting model here, because some customers are taking it up.
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm still of the firm belief that this type of thing, I don't really see too much value in MVNO other than it's a part of marketing tool at least, you know. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing, you know. You want to keep customers and you want to offer them more services. I mean, a lot of business entities offer insurance and financial services and add-ons and bonus, you know, all these little things that you can get.
Yeah.
It's just an extension of that. I don't think we're the target market for it, because we know what we want to buy. We know what we want to get. We kind of go directly to the source rather than having a third player involved there.
But I suppose it's handy if we're power users. We like to shop around and get the best deals. But I suppose if you're a Standard Bank customer or an FNB customer and you're always on online banking anyway, it's very easy just to, okay, I'll have some data, off I go.
Yeah. Look, it makes a lot of sense, again, from the bank's point of view, because I can add a lot of benefit. I don't know. Is banking zero rated on this for Standard Bank customers, for example?
I actually don't know.
Pay? So if there's value added like that, then it makes a lot of sense. Just give them some added whatever security and features. It'll also probably make it a lot more difficult to do a SIM swap on your device, because your bank is probably now doing the paperwork on that, right? So hopefully unlikely that happens. I don't know. I mean, I'm just thinking of all the benefits of something like this. But yeah, it's still just add on value, add on service. If you get a SIM card with a checking account, for example, and you potentially get this for free every month, maybe a 500 rand value, that could be quite cool.
They are giving you value. So if you're depending on the platform, on the package you're on, credit card or check card, they give you free airtime every month.
Cool.
But you spend, I think it's 39 rand. And then if you're on the top tier plan, I think you get 419 Rand or 439 Rand of airtime.
Oh, that's cool. So there's some benefit in there, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like I really don't like subscribing to any of these rewards programs because I don't see any value. I find that you generally just pay. You just pay for something you don't really get the 1-for-1 return on it. But yeah, it's nice when you get something out of it.
That said, I'm an F&B customer, and I think eBucks is absolutely fantastic. I'm also not a fan of rewards programs, but eBucks is brilliant. As long as you follow the things it wants you to do to get up onto the higher rewards level. So I'm on level 5. So I just read through how to do it, and I do those things now, and I'm on rewards level 5, and you actually get meaningful rewards. I'm getting 2 tanks of petrol a month in value from eBucks.
But you are also spending, I would imagine, quite a bit using their system. So you may have done it in any case, so you would get that value based on just, you know, using their card all the time to pay for stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They disincentivize drawing cash from an ATM, for example, and pay with your card. So I do that. I don't mind. I mean, I'm not sure.
That you do it in any case. Yeah,
I'm not sure the merchants are very happy with me buying a newspaper with my credit card, but but I do it. I actually can't remember the last time I drew cash. It must have been at least a month ago.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm the same. Like, we don't need cash anymore. It really isn't a thing.
I'm actually thinking.
Yeah, Sorry, go for it.
I'm just saying, I'm actually thinking of ditching my wallet. I've got a new case for my phone, which has 2 card slots. And I'm thinking of just putting my credit card in there and my my driver's license and not carrying a wallet anymore.
Duncan, that is very hipster of you. That's a very hipster move. I'm not going to have a wallet, just full on digital. Next thing you're going to want a QR code tattoo.
Oh, that's an idea. but seriously, I mean, do you really need to carry around this wallet with all these cards? And I mean, I don't use these loyalty programs.
It just collects receipts.
Yeah, receipts, I suppose, it's useful to...
It collects receipts, that's what I'm saying. Like, you don't need it. Like, you actually don't need receipts. You just take a photograph and throw it away.
Exactly. That's a good point, too. I'm going to try this, actually. I think maybe for the next week or two, I'm just going to carry my phone, my driver's license, and my credit card and see how far I can get.
So where did you get a case like that? I mean, did you buy it online?
Yeah, I bought it from Mobile Fun, which is a UK...
it's international. Okay.
Yeah, it's almost impossible to get cases for new devices in this country for quite a while after they launch, which is really irritating. I got a fantastic Olixar case from Mobile Fun. They're quite good, although their delivery fees are quite high. Let's talk about, and I don't know if there's going to be much to talk about here, but let's talk a little bit about Black Friday and Cyber Monday, which is all happening this weekend. Did you have a look at any of the websites? Did you get excited by any of the deals you saw?
No, not really. Look, I think we spoke about this last year too. My feelings about Black Friday, I think a lot of people's feelings about Black Friday is just, it's just, again, big marketing hype. And even though I work in that industry, like, or do part-time work in that industry, you know, I can see it for what it is. And unless you do something really big, unless it's a really big sale, I guess, you shouldn't really be doing Black Friday. But it's still fun to see, I guess, you know, if I was buying stuff, now I would be holding out and just waiting for some good deals to come up. There has been some good deals that I've seen. But again, a lot of the best deals are limited to like the first 100 or the first 50.
Yeah.
Chances of getting access or getting to it, it's pretty slim, I would say, for a lot of the good deals. So is it worth the effort? Probably not.
Yeah, I must say, I had a look at 6 websites and I saw some things I was slightly tempted by, but I didn't actually end up buying anything. I just spent a lot of time on Orms Direct and Outdoor Photo, two photographic websites. It's online stores.
Love it.
They have got some great stuff, but I didn't see anything that really grabbed me. And there is one lens that I'm looking at, but it wasn't discounted.
that's the other thing. A lot of the good stuff. But I'm from keeping an eye on what's happening, because I'm always curious about these things too, you know. So I did look at a lot of it, kind of see, especially on the tech side, what's out there. You know, I saw some USB sticks that were really well priced, and I was tempted by that. And that is really funny. That was the only thing that I thought, that's what I want. Because it's, you know, a lot of people go into Black Friday or Cyber Monday thinking they need something when they actually don't, because it's just a good price. You should go into it, what do I need? Like a new tripod or a new lens or, you know, fortunately there wasn't anything that I was needing. But in terms of this, in terms of the sale, Yeah, nothing. And
I was impressed I was impressed at the price of some flat screen TVs, particularly LED TVs. They've come down significantly. I saw some 65-inch 4K OLEDs, sorry, not OLEDs, backlit LED LCD displays for under 10,000 rand.
Sure, that's not bad. Yeah, see, again, you can Black Friday and Cyber Monday could work really well for you if you know what you want. And you just go for that, because sometimes you may need to get there first or get there early if you want that big screen at a good price. If it's not a rolling special that they have. But if we look at some of the, maybe it's a sign of my age too. But I was also a little excited about the Zando special. They had some good special on some clothing, and I was also looking at that, going, there's some really nice shoes there for not too bad. No, nice jeans for like 200 bucks. Nice shoes for 200 bucks. That's good pricing if you ask me for branded clothing.
Yeah.
So again, shop for what you need. But it's always fun to see people breaking down the doors. Did you see that video clip again from a game store somewhere?
No.
Where people were pushing through, trying to get in, and trying to be orderly. The first few people walk in, and then everybody just starts pushing. And
I won't go anywhere near a physical store on Black Friday. I look at a lot of deals on websites, but there's no way I'm going into a store on that day.
It was also good and slightly funny to see that, and no offense to these guys, I do love them, but Takealot with the payment portals not being able to, which is not their fault.
It wasn't.
Fairness,
no.
it's
their website, all credit to Takealot, stayed up this year.
but because what they did was they switched off those payment portals, because as soon as they started hitting problems, they sent out the message to say that you can still do EFT or there was another method of payment.
Right. Right.
So what they did was they switched off those because if the request to the payment merchant gets delayed and you have a backup there, then that affects your website.
Yes.
So just by switching that off, unfortunately, whoever was in the queue would have lost the ability to check out. So they would probably have had to go through, refresh the page and go through the process. But yeah, maybe we should be asking the questions from the financial services guys. How do you not keep these services up? Mm. I mean, you'd imagine that the entire country is doing thousands of transactions a minute. What would a few million more be on a day? I mean, surely that should be scalable.
Absolutely.
That's a conversation I would like to have, actually.
Yeah, that's a good point. So Cyber Monday is tomorrow. That's the day when typically tech products get discounted, particularly if in the States. I'm not too hopeful about seeing massive discounts on tech products in South Africa. But once again, I'll be having a look, see if there's anything that grabs my attention.
There's a lot of software online. I mean, talking about Black Friday, I've seen a lot of really good deals on a lot of the stuff that I use. Steam. Steam was going to be my last mention, but yeah, Steam sale is probably the best way to spend your money, and you support some really good developers in the process. Software online. I found out one of my absolute favorite DJ programs called DJ Pro by a company called Algorithm. They did a 50% off on their software.
Nice.
So 400 rand for 800 back software. So I bought that. That was absolutely fantastic.
Nice.
So that was a good score in my opinion, because I've been looking at the software. I had it on Mac. Didn't have it. It's not transferable to PC. So I haven't had it since I've moved over to Windows. And, I've been keeping an eye on it. And then when the special dropped, it was there. So it was
nice.
Good bargain.
Good stuff. So the final story on the list this week is one about a company using diamonds to power drones. And because this is a drone story, this is Richard's speciality. tell us about it.
So, yes, I mean, we know drone technology is now obviously the thing, and we're going to see a lot of future services and technologies making use of it without a doubt. We still need to figure out exactly how all of this is going to work together, but we know that we have one major issue at the moment, and that is keeping a drone in the air for long periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
And that is because of battery power. I mean, we can't just slap a motor on these things. They'll still need petrol. Some companies do have tethered solutions. Some companies have like automated drones that can land and just quickly recharge the battery pack, but it's not keeping them in the air, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this company called Lake Diamond, they produce artificial diamonds. They've got this process, and they actually sell diamonds to the manufacturing industry to fund all of this technology that they're building. And the idea is essentially using lasers to power drones. What the diamond does in the whole process is to kind of take out a lot of the heat element and focus and purify that laser beam that gets shot out at the end. So what they've done is they've produced these little square-shaped diamonds that they shoot these lasers through, and they are able to power drones. Now, the current test system that they've built uses a 1.5 micrometer laser to deliver 4 watts, which is about the equivalent of 10,000 laser pointers, which can power a small palm-sized drone.
How so safe the technology.
This is still very small in terms of the size. So this is only going to power a small drone the size of your hand that carries like a little camera.
Okay.
But it can fly indefinitely for a distance of up to 10 meters. Mm-hmm. Now they do say it's very safe. It's like any laser pointer, you're not going to burn your hand off if you come into the path of it, or if you look into it or anything. It's just like a normal laser. Obviously, you wouldn't want to be focused on that little laser pointer.
Yeah.
But the technology certainly means, I mean, it means that at least in a small scale, they're able to power a flying drone indefinitely. Now, scale that up, you might have a network array of lasers that take over from each other to power a drone. Obviously, one of the problems is the size. At the moment, you're going to have quite a large panel if you scale this up in terms of current technology. If you're looking at that little palm-sized drone that they have, if you want to scale this up to anything useful, you're going to have a much larger cell to turn that laser energy into that laser light into useful energy for that drone. But hey, people are working on this, and you know it has to start somewhere. I'm not sure if this is going to be the solution, but it certainly makes a lot of sense, right?
Mm. I mean, that's one of the biggest problems with drones is they don't stay up very long.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Battery power is another thing that, I mean, once we get to a point where you have a battery that's light and can hold a lot of power, you know, that's another potential solution, but we're not there yet. We're nowhere close to that. Mm. But it's nice to see these solutions. And it's very geeky, obviously. What else can we power with that? I mean, we've seen some microprocessing technologies that uses lasers to transmit data in short distances.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's laser and light. I think that they're definitely onto something there, that's for sure.
I think we've got a name for the show there, laser and lights. that's our news this week. Let's move on to our regular features. Our winner this week is still under Benny Abrams for being appointed as the minister of the very clumsily named for the moment, Ministry of Telecommunications and Postal Services and Communications. Or was it Communications and Telecommunications and Postal Services? But I presume there'll be a better name for it coming up in the not-too-distant future. She's certainly a rising star in political circles in South Africa, and let's hope she does a good job with the portfolio. That's Stella and Benny Abrams, our winner this week. And our loser this week is the U.S. government over its jingoism regarding Huawei and China. It just really does seem over the top. So they're our loser this week. I do hope I get a visa next time I want to go there.
I was just going to say something. Maybe I shouldn't. But if you go look at some of the things that Donald Trump says, you know, in his press briefings or just talking to the public or talking to other, there is some weird stuff that's coming out of that person's mouth. And yeah, he's running the country, right? He's running the major influence on this planet. We're certainly in for interesting times. Run by a television show, a reality television show.
Indeed. I guess neither of us are getting visas to the States anytime soon, but so be it.
I'm sorry, guys. But it's the truth, right?
Excuse me. What's your pick this week, Rahad?
Okay, so as I said, I've been trawling through the Steam. I love the Steam sale. It's always fantastic to spend a few rand. And there's some really well-priced games, too. I mean, you can spend anything from 2 rand to 100 rand if you want. But the game that I've recently got, and a friend of mine introduced me to this, and when it was on sale now, I actually had to buy it. It's called the Jackbox Party, and there's a few packs available, but the one that I got is the Trilogy. It's a bundle of the first 3 games. Now, what this is, and it runs on Steam, obviously, so you have to run it on a computer. Mm-hmm. But essentially, this is a party game. So you play with a few friends having a bra or something, getting around the TV or around your computer. This is an awesome game to play, and it is so much fun, especially if you like card games like Cards Against Humanity and anything that's a party game, a fun party game. But what makes this a lot more fun and very interesting is the fact that everybody uses their iPad or cell phone. to then actually participate in the game. So the game mechanics is quite interesting. You run the game on Steam, on your computer, or on your TV. Mm-hmm. And everybody, before the game starts, has a code that you just go onto via a webpage. You go onto this, it'll be whatever the URL is, /random, a few random digits, and then everybody gets into this lobby, put their name as you would, and then the game starts. And there's a few games from quizzes to drawing something on. The games are really interesting, and it's a lot of fun. And you're playing with people, you're playing, you know, it's funny, it's fun. You're playing against people, you're trying to make people laugh, but you're also trying to kind of just win this game. And it is definitely well worth getting if you're into that kind of fun party games. And it's hilarious to begin with. But yeah, you can spend anything from $160 for the game only to about $600 for everything, if you want everything and all the expansions. But the one I got was $400, and again, well worth it.
Great. I'm going to have to check that out. Might have to try it a bit later, Lerahat.
It's a lot of fun. Cool. It's a lot of fun.
My pick this week is I've been playing around for the last couple of weeks with a brand new 65-inch OLED TV from LG. And I'm in love. Mm. This thing is absolutely beautiful. I've got a plasma TV. I bought one of the very last plasmas that was available in the market. And sadly, they don't make them anymore. And I bought the plasma after having quite a detailed discussion with the CTO at MultiChoice, who convinced me that the plasma rather than LED or backlit TVs was the way to go. So I got an LG plasma, 60-inch, and it's beautiful. I really, really like it, although it's starting to look a bit dated, to be honest, especially next to this incredibly sexy ultra-thin OLED from LG. Mm. But the picture quality on this OLED was unbelievable. 4K set. When it's in standby mode, it puts up pictures of artwork on the screen, and
it
was really, really, really beautiful. I mean, it looked like a painting. And the playback, I switched my Netflix to 4K for a bit to check it out, and I almost found the images to be too realistic. It really looked, you know, television, you almost expect not to be terribly realistic.
It was
so sharp that I almost felt this looks too sharp. It's a weird thing to try and describe. I'm sure I'd get used to it.
It works for certain things. Like if you're watching a documentary like Earth or something, we're like, wow, that's what you want. But if you're watching a movie, you probably want, you don't want to see everything. You want to see everything in detail.
Because it kind of, you kind of end up looking at something in the picture and it just distracts you from the storyline. It's like, why has that guy got a little pimple on his nose or whatever it is?
Exactly. That's why I don't want to be an actor in today's day and age. Everything will be picked up.
But I'm amazed how the price of OLED sets has come down. They really have fallen a lot. So they're currently on sale on this Black Friday weekend for 40,000 rand for the 65-inch model, down from, I think, the normal 50 or 55,000 rand. I have no doubt the prices are going to continue falling, though. I am not in the market to buy one of these yet because we all know what happens to TV prices. LG's the only one, as far as I know, major one doing OLED panels. Samsung does something called QLED. I'm not quite sure what QLED is. I haven't used one of their TVs, but I do know it's not OLED. It's a backlit system. I think they've done some very clever work to make it at least reasonably similar to OLED in terms of the blackness in the picture and that sort of thing. But it's not OLED. OLED is what you really want to get. And I'm sure more manufacturers are going to start making them. I think Panasonic markets OLED sets as well, but I think the panels themselves are also made by LG. But 40,000 rand at the moment on this Black Friday weekend, I've got no doubt that the price will fall to 30 or 25 by this time next year. They'll keep falling as they always do. And I suppose by the time the manufacturers are starting to punt 8K TVs, which I think is probably only a few years away, I think a nice 75-inch OLED 4K TV is probably going to be under 20K.
You know what your mom said to you about sitting too close to the TV, eh? I mean, having one of these monsters right in front of your face.
Yeah. The 65-inch I found... The 65-inch, I don't know, I guess I was spoiled, but I actually found 65-inch to be too small.
I think my next TV, I want to save up, and I'm not going to buy a new TV for a few years yet. I'm still very happy with my 60-inch plasma. But when I get my next TV, I fully expect it's going to be at least 75 inches and possibly as much as 90.
Are you being serious now? That's huge.
It's huge, but I know. But
you want the full Netflix experience.
I'm getting old. My eyesight's failing. I need a massive TV.
No, look, I can certainly appreciate it, especially if you play games on such a big screen, maybe some Xbox or something. I mean, there's a lot of benefit to it. But yeah.
And you get a big screen like that, you can also put it a bit further away from you and mount it on the wall. So there's more space in the room. I see that I think it's LG as well. It was selling this weekend an 88 or an 87. I think it was an 88-inch 4K LED TV for 30,000 rand.
Jeez.
88-inch. So the prices are coming.
It's one up. One iPhone XS.
Exactly. XS 10S Max, yeah. iPhone 10S Max for an 88-inch 4K TV.
I said XS deliberately because it's not 10. I mean, I'm still confused by that whole thing.
Yeah, everyone calls it XS.
Old Apple.
Yeah, terrible name. So, if you want to spend 40 grand on a TV or more after this Black Friday weekend, and you want the best, one of the best TVs out there, you can go and get that 65-inch OLED.
Sorry, what else does it have that makes it, apart from the picture, I mean, does it have any other interesting features?
Well, it's a smart TV. It's got built-in Netflix and Amazon Prime apps. You can download apps from the store. It's got a very nice remote with voice control. So you hold down a little voice button on it. You can say settings, and it'll bring up settings, for example, or open Netflix, and it'll open Netflix. Nice. So the remote is very good. It's got what they call an air mouse. So you just shake it and point at the TV. It's a point-and-click sort of interface.
So to scroll Netflix and stuff.
Yeah. It's the same technology that's available on LG's more high-end.
I'm not really a smart TV user, so I've
me neither.
I mean, I've got a computer connected to mine, so that's all smart TV. I mean, I can appreciate it, but I've never really used it. So
I'm the same. Just give me a panel.
Don't have a reference.
Just give me a panel. That's all I need.
Yeah, that's the thing. I only have panels. I don't have TVs, though, so I just use a PC to connect to a panel, and that's how I
consume. I suppose it's useful if you don't want to invest in something that you plug into your TV. And it's basic functionality. I mean, you can fire up Netflix, you can fire up Amazon.
No, it makes a lot of sense, to be honest. It's great to have it.
It's great to have it,
You just set it up. You don't have to have it. Because having a PC, if you're not tech-savvy and you don't actually need it, it's a bit of a waste.
But tech-savvy people like you and me, we prefer to connect some sort of PC device to the TV because it gives us much more power. We can access a web browser. We can do just about anything we want.
Exactly, and transfer files from... So if I want to stream some video from another PC in the house, I can do so, you know?
Yeah.
No, it's just preferences, but it's nice to see. It's nice to see what you can do with these new high-end TVs. Yeah. But I'm certainly not in the market for a TV.
I'm certainly not buying an OLED TV at that price, given the price will come down. But there are early adopters out there, and people, of course, just got to have the stuff. So they're the guys who's going to create the demand and bring down the pricing for the rest of us.
Oh, yeah. Please do, guys. Go buy it more.
Yeah. And that, Richard, I think, is our show, apart from our quiz results. Where did I put the quiz results? Here they are. Let me do the first question. No, that's last week. What am I doing with this paper on my desk? Give me a sec.
Impressed that you read show notes off printed paper and not off the screen.
The thing is, I've got laptops here doing different tasks for streaming this podcast, not that the stream's actually working, and recording it and talking to you and all that sort of thing, so I don't want to mess with them too much. And I also like just to hold a pen and write notes on the show notes as we go.
Make notes, yeah. It's old school, that's good.
But I must tell you, I have ordered the new iPad Pro.
Have you ordered it now? Nice.
I've ordered it. There's no stock in the country, so I have no idea when I'm going to get it. But I've also ordered the new Apple second generation Pencil. So I think in future shows I will be ditching the paper and doing all of this.
Just doing that. Oh, you're going to have to. You are going to then have to do that.
I can't wait to get this device. It looks so amazing.
I'm missing out on all the tech now that I'm out of the studio. So maybe we should do it. Once you have all your tech sorted, we need to record in studio again and then just do a...
Absolutely, yeah. Pop in
catch
and we'll
and see. Play all the tech. Yeah, play absolutely. All the toys.
Well, we're threatening to do a end of year special, so maybe that's the time to do it.
Yes, we should. We should.
Good stuff. So let me do the first question in the quiz this week. With the launch this week of Standard Bank Mobile, how many MVNOs or mobile virtual network operators now piggyback on Cell C's network? And I was amazed to see this number. It's now 19.
Wow, that's good business for them.
Yeah.
Nice.
Huge business.
Second question, how many set-top boxes have now been activated by OpenView, the free-to-air satellite provider owned by eMedia Investments? And that is 1.4 million.
That's also an impressive number, I must say.
Yeah. And it's free-to-air channels, which is great.
It's completely free. Yeah, I was staying in an Airbnb down in East London a few weeks ago, and they had OpenView. They had Netflix as well, but it was on a very poor DSL line, so I gave up trying to watch Netflix, but I was watching OpenView. And it's actually, for what it is, it's not bad.
What kind of channels are on there? Is it interesting stuff, or is it just all foreign channels?
They've got quite a few HD channels. They've got a movies channel, eMovies channel, which is in HD.
Oh, eMovies, yes.
They've got news channels.
But that's all reruns of all Steven Seagal movies, isn't it?
Action Night on E. Remember those ads? Action Night on E.
Oh, yeah. Loved it.
They're not the latest movies, but for a free offering, you can't really complain.
Not bad.
They've got the SABC channels. They have ETV. They have... There's a environment channel, National Geographic. I think it's National Geographic, but it's something like that. There's a couple of religious channels. There's a couple of news channels. BBC is on there.
So now that we're fighting with the digital broadcasting, why don't everybody just switch over to these guys? I mean, they've already got infrastructure in place. Makes sense. And they're not using the bandwidth we need.
Indeed.
Satellite.
Indeed. It's a very good question, Rahat. It's a very good question. Why not?
No, I mean, it makes sense. It's we digress from the quiz. third question in this week's quiz. Which technology company is on the verge of overtaking Apple as the world's most valuable company? And can you believe it? They're back.
Microsoft. Can you believe it? The Apple share price has really tanked in the last 2 months on worries about iPhone sales growth going backwards. Mm. And Microsoft has built a fantastic strategy around cloud computing, Azure services, and they're doing incredibly well. And there's every possibility that in the next day or two, Microsoft will be the biggest company in the world by market cap.
Fantastic.
Amazing stuff. Uber rival Taxify said this week it is expanding to which part of South Africa, and that's the Garden Route.
And the final question. The soon-to-be-launched Discovery Bank is being led by former Chief Information Officer of Nedbank. Who is he? And the answer is Barry Hoare.
Barry Hoare, who was also at SARS as Chief Operating Officer, and he left, I think, as Tom Moyani was coming in. I think, by all accounts, a big loss to SARS. Smart guy. Although apparently quite difficult to work with, I believe. So
it's Elon Musk apparently too, and Steve Jobs. I mean,
Steve Jobs was apparently appalling. Absolutely, apparently appalling. He used to fire people in the elevator.
I've worked with some very intelligent people, and it's certainly a trait. It's par for the course, right?
Yeah. So the only thing left to do this week is to play out with a song, and it's my pick this week. And Stephen Wilson, who I'm a huge fan of course, he was the former frontman of Porcupine Tree. He is now he's put out about 5 or 6 solo albums, and they just keep getting better with every album. He plays almost fusion jazzy type rock, lots of prog. And he's just done put out a brand new album called Home Invasion, and in concert at the Royal Albert Hall, and it's really well worth listening to. I highly recommend it if you like your music on the jazzier and more progressive side. But this is a track called Pariah, and it features find that other piece of paper I needed.
Find the paper. Yeah. You sound like a radio DJ. Oh, yeah. Where's this library?
Where's my paper? I've got like 10. The problem is I leave the old show notes on the desk here and they're all piling up. Stephen Wilson featuring Nina, I think it's pronounced Nina Tayeb, and the song is called Pariah. From Rechard and myself, until next time, take care and cheers.
Ciao, ciao.
Tired of yesterday. I'm And all the worn out things that I ever said, now it's much too late. The words stay in my head.
Thank you.